And we're going for about 45 minutes, or that's
Okay.
the goal, but
Yep.
whatever we get. Okay, so this is Emily Hutchison. Today is November 3rd, 2016. I'm a student at University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm interviewing Maria Genoviak. Is that how you say it? Okay. This interview is taking place at the 2016 SAF National Convention in Madison, Wisconsin. And at the Monona Terrace Convention Center. I think I'm going to turn the volume up, or maybe. This interview is sponsored by the Society of American Foresters and the University of Wisconsin Oral History Program and is part of the SAF Oral History Project. Can you say your name and spell your last name?
Yeah. Maria Genoviak,
Okay.
Genowiak.
Perfect. Okay, so the first question is, can you tell me the story of how you became a forester?
Yeah, when. Don't know if there was a certain time in particular, but I went to school at Michigan Tech, and originally I was really interested in environmental science, and I started in their applied ecology and environmental science program. And when I was a sophomore, I was seeing that a lot of the upperclassmen who are graduating, the foresters, were getting better jobs than the people in the applied ecology program, and that the two curricula were really similar. And so, in some ways, it didn't really matter. And so, I thought, well, I'll switch to forestry, and then I'll be probably more likely to get a job. But any job that I would have done with the other degree, I could still do. And so, it was a way to potentially open some additional doors. And so, I switched the semester before fall camp, which is kind of when you would need to definitely make your decision about which one program you're going to be in.
Okay, what is fall camp?
Fall camp is a semester-long field work program, and different universities have it at different lengths. Sometimes a lot of universities have summer camps, and so it might be 2 or 3 weeks. We have a fall camp that's 14 weeks at Michigan Tech that is really field-based intensive. And so instead of having, a class that runs from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. 3 days a week, your classes are in block schedules. So you have timber harvesting for a day and silviculture for a day, and it allows you to get out and do a lot of more extended projects, to go on field trips, to do a lot of different things you couldn't do in a more typical environment. And it's also off-site. So instead of being on campus at Michigan Tech, it's at the Ford Center, which is about an hour away from campus, and so you live off-site for
Oh,
one
cool.
semester, and it's just your classmates. And so it's a completely different experience, and I think it's really, really great. Like, this, a lot of schools are getting away from it, but I think it's a really good thing because you get so much field experience, and it's just really cool.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. Can you tell me a little bit about your career as a forester?
Yeah, I. During the summers that I was in school, I worked for different agencies and organizations in the summer. So I always had a summer job that was related. So I worked for the Forest Service doing research one summer. I worked for Natural Resources Conservation Service as a soils conservation trainee for 2 summers. The summer between after I finished my bachelor's and going on to my master's, I worked for the Forest Service. And so I went on for my master's, and then coming out of that, I actually went into the position which I'm still at, which is working for this group called the Northern Institute of Applied Climate Science. And when I started there, it was for an outreach specialist position. And so I was fresh out of my master's and didn't know anything about climate change. And I was supposed to be communicating stuff about climate change to natural resource professionals, so maybe it was good that I didn't know anything because I had to start from square one and think about how to communicate that. And I was the only person besides the director of that institute working and at that time. And we got a new director and Chris, and together we started up new projects. And so it's been almost 10 years, and we went from it just being myself on soft funding and Chris being the director, to getting more and more people and more projects. And so we've grown to having 16 people in our institute in 10 years. And so my career has been weird because I've always been in one particular place with one organization, but being the first person in, I was always helping grow it. And so I went from being just this person who is communicating some information and doing some presentations to, you know, now it's helping to lead this group of 16 people and figure out what our organization is and what we need to be doing. So that's been really, really interesting and unique that it's worked out that way.
Yeah, that is. So what are the other roles of the 16 employees?
We have a couple different projects that we focus on. Of the 16 people, about 10 of them focus on mostly on climate change adaptation work. And so it's in that vein of communicating information about climate change and other related issues to natural resource professionals. So we have a couple people who work on a national website for the Forest Service called the Climate Change Resource Center. And so they maintain the website, help develop the content. There's a webmaster and education specialist, and they really run that national website. We have another cohort of people who are focused more on helping, providing technical assistance and support for natural resource managers who are interested in incorporating climate change. So we have a project called the Climate Change Response Framework. We have ties and coordinate the USDA Climate Hubs, Northern Forest Climate Hub. And so those people are really focused more on like direct outreach. So it's a lot of presentations and technical assistance and really kind of figuring out what land managers are needing and communicating that information and helping them get there and helping them incorporate climate change into their work. And that's what I spend a lot of my time on as well. And then we have a handful of people who work more on pure carbon science about how carbon cycles within forest ecosystems. And so they work much stronger on the research side, but still trying to get the research out there. So one person runs the International Soil Carbon Network to understand where soil carbon is globally. And then other people work on a radiocarbon collaborative that's helping make radiocarbon dating more accessible to the scientific community. So it's a lot of different things.
Yeah, that's cool. How long have you been involved with, or how have you been involved with, the Society of American Foresters?
I joined SAF when I was an undergraduate. I was in the forestry club at Michigan Tech from even my very first semester. So the Forestry Club of Michigan Tech is also the student chapter of the Society of American Foresters. And so I probably joined SAF my sophomore year. And I've generally been a member since then, although I think I missed a few years in school. But I got involved in it there, went to a few state-level meetings. I was an officer at undergrad, so I was able to go to a national meeting. I think it was my senior year when I was a grad student. I kept my membership, and I presented at SAF a poster as a grad student. And then when I started working professionally, I got involved with the Michigan chapter. And so for a couple years, I helped organize the annual meetings, or I guess it's twice a year there. There's meetings twice a year. One would be the Upper Peninsula chapter in Michigan, and one would be the Lower Peninsula chapter. And so I think I helped maybe 3 years in a row of helping on meeting planning. And yeah, since then I've had to back away from that because I've been really busy at work, but I still have been able to come to a lot of meetings to present, and it's really great because, I mean, especially this one, it's like I feel like I know almost everybody.
That's fun.
There's a lot of people, but it's surprising how many of them I know from past meetings.
Okay, so now into questions about the project. This project was developed to understand people's perceptions of diversity and inclusion in the forestry profession. How has your ethnicity, cultural background, or gender influenced your career as a forester?
Mm-hmm. I hadn't really thought about these issues at all until last year. I was actually on a plenary panel for last year's convention about diversity. And so I had to like think about it. especially from the perspective of a, like, a young professional female. But I think for me, it worked in my favor. I was talking to a friend about this because I am really she's always like pegged as being like a really like boys club, or it can be, and I think that that can be really intimidating for some women. And for me, it actually worked in my favor, or it maybe didn't scare me off, because in high school I was on some of the boys sports teams. Then I went to Michigan Tech, was three quarters guys.
Wow.
Or three guys for every girl. And I just felt, in some ways, I felt really comfortable in that environment. And so it was really not really that different, I guess, for going into forestry. And so I haven't really experienced necessarily some of the challenges, I think, that some other people do in terms of feeling like they fit in. I feel like that's really sprawly. I'm trying to think of what other elements of the question were in there.
So some follow-ups would be, how has your discipline or regional experiences influenced your career as a forester?
Mm-hmm.
So diversity in a very broad sense. I can give you this. I have this copy.
No, it's okay. I just had to think about it.
Yeah, it's a big question.
Yeah.
Maybe we could go on to number five. That's... So what are your thoughts about diversity and inclusion in the forestry profession?
Yeah, it's interesting in terms of, I mean, to me it just really means about, you know, welcoming other people to the table. And so I don't know. I know that people are really concerned about diversity in SAF and in the Forest Service where I work, and it's just a really interesting kind of puzzle, because it's sort of a, you know, I would hope that we're like welcoming to, you know, everyone who's really interested, and it's and you know, when I was starting out, it was certainly welcoming to me. I remember a lot of the professionals coming out and making time to talk to me as a student. And I definitely think about that when I, you know, try and talk to other people. And I think it's really great to also talk to people from other, you know, parts of the country or from other backgrounds and things. So I think it's really just, about having the ability to, welcome people in. I think there's probably other issues in terms of people not even recognizing that there is forestry, and
right. So
the pool of people who are coming in are probably not as diverse as they could be. But I don't know about that.
Yeah. Is Michigan Tech a big forestry school?
It is. It's a pretty big forestry program. I don't know in terms of where it would kind of rank, but I think it's pretty solidly like middle to large in terms of groups. It seems like there's probably about, if you combine forestry, wildlife, and applied ecology, there's probably about 50 undergraduates, I would guess, 30 to 50 undergraduates that apply each year. It's really interesting to me, kind of getting back to that other piece that I said, is that there's these different degree programs you can have, but a lot of people are dual majoring because now, which wasn't a possibility when I went to school, because you know, they want to work in wildlife, but they can't. They want to make sure that they can get a job, so they dual major. So,
is the gender breakdown different, do you think, in different?
You know, so Michigan Tech, I think, is about, you know, three quarters male overall. And so in some of the engineering, it's really stark. And so there's very few females in some of the engineering. In terms of forestry, I remember it being, and I think it is this way, it's largely 50-50, and when you get to the master's level, it ends up being, I think, even more strongly to women. So I never felt like it was, even though I said like I went to Michigan Tech and wasn't nervous about there being this a lot of guys relative to girls and things, within the forestry program itself, it seems like it was pretty well balanced. And now it seems like, as a young professional, it seems like there are a lot of, you know, I feel like there's at least as many women working in a lot of the areas in the science side and in some of the areas of the things that I work in.
Hmm. What role can SAF play in enhancing diversity and inclusion? So if it seems...
No, I mean, I think it's... It would be really interesting to see where people are... What people are thinking about in terms of just getting more people into forestry and related programs. And I know that that's probably where some of the natural resource part comes in, is my impression is that when you're attending meetings or when you're in the schools, it's overall like a really welcoming environment. I've had very few weird experiences where I've felt like it wasn't and don't hear a whole lot. So I think that it's really more on just, you know, those, like, whether it's getting high schoolers to actually see what these jobs are and go into them and know that these jobs are available and go to college for these sorts of things, or, you know, the stuff with kids. It seems like, you know, there's probably a lot of work that they would have to do more on that side, because it seems like once you get people in, my experience has been that it's been really welcoming. So I think it's just a matter of, like, getting more diversity coming in the door,
right,
and things to do that. One random idea, since this is, I didn't go into field forestry, which I think is different, you know, because I'm working in science, I'm working in office. And so when my husband's a field forester, when I have tons of friends who are field foresters. And so when you start to look at that more work that ends up happening in the woods, there definitely are fewer women, especially in the private sector, on that. And I think it's, those jobs are really tough. And I've thought about that in terms of why didn't I go that route, or why would I be intimidated? Why am I intimidated to have, you know, my husband or my friend's field forester job? And it sounds really funny, but when I think about it, the thing that makes me the most intimidated to do that, and probably the biggest barrier for me and maybe other women, I don't know, is machinery. Okay. And not being comfortable driving a snowmobile, driving a four-wheeler, being able to be in the woods and have a piece of equipment break and be able to fix it, or be able to pull a snowmobile out of snow. There's a lot of things in that part that I think are really intimidating. The idea of having to drive a four-wheeler up onto the back of a truck up those ramps terrifies me. And so I feel like that's probably, it's so funny, but I think that that's probably not unusual, because yeah. I think that a lot of guys just have that thing where they're expected to know it, or they like it more, or even if they feel uncomfortable, they maybe wouldn't say something as much. So oddly, I've been thinking about just like, maybe they just need to have all students do more. And I think Stephen's point does it, do more in terms of, you have to learn to run a chainsaw and you have to learn to drive a four-wheeler, just like how you have to use a GPS or a computer. Because that's a huge part of the job, and it's not anything that's ever taught. But it's really, really intimidating to me as a woman. But I think it would probably be to, you know, other, you know, in terms of diversity, if we're trying to attract people from more urbanized populations or other areas, it's going to be the same thing, because if you're growing up in a city or something, you're not going to have those same skills. And so, you know, a lot of the field foresters especially are, you know, country farm kids, and they have a certain set of skills that they grow up with that other people don't.
Yeah, that sounds intimidating.
Yeah, I'm sure I could do it, but I just haven't had to. So
yeah, I'm sure they could teach it. And then you become more comfortable. When do you decide, is it just job placement, or when did you decide, or the track for becoming a field forester or not?
Yeah, I fell into it. I kept being, I think because I was a good student, I kept being pulled into research types of positions. And so I ended up working in research positions during the summer, or Natural Resource Conservation Service. So I ended up having just a little bit different portfolio coming out of school because when you're a good student, people want you to work on research projects and things. And so that was a big part of it. Those still had field work. And so it really wasn't until, you know, I came out of school with my master's, I still would have definitely been looking at field forester positions or Department of Natural Resource type position. And then I ended up with the one I have now. And so probably not going to change it at this point, but it basically was kind of the job I managed to get right out of school, and that it happened to be a good fit, and that it's been really, really great. But it really seems to be what's dictated. It's just that first job.
Where do you see the profession of forestry going in the next 20 to 100 years? It's a big range.
Oh, that's really interesting. I don't think much about the technology side of things, but that's really crazy to think about. There was just a conference I was at, a booth at a different conference last week, and they were doing carbon inventories with this contraption that you would snap on your phone, and they would basically give this contraption to a landowner. They would snap this thing on their phone, basically take like a panoramic image, and it would be able to collect all the information on the forest, measuring tree diameters down to a tenth inch. And so the potential of that in terms of how it could potentially change field work is really interesting. Slightly scary sometimes just because it's so different.
Yeah.
So there's whole parts in terms of the technology that I don't really track as much. But, you know, field foresters don't need to maybe run ATVs and snowmobiles as much in terms of a lot of those positions as the technology increases. And that might be an opportunity on the diversity side for certain. I think it's been really interesting to see forestry actually start to understand that we have to talk to people. Because I've even seen change in the 10 or 15 years that I've been participating, is that we don't, like, a lot of foresters are a personality. A lot of people go into it because they want to work in the woods and they don't want to be around people and they want that quiet. And so then when they talk about realizing that, no, like, your entire job is still dealing with people, and it's not that often that you're out in the woods by yourself, that... the people realize that, and so it's interesting to see an increase in understanding the importance of communities, understanding the importance of the social sciences in forestry, and I think that will be one thing that'll really change. I don't know what that looks like, but it does seem like there are really cool things going on in the realm of urban forestry, urban community forestry, in terms of community engagement, and in an era when we're going to have more people in urban areas, and kind of people looking at forests for amenity values, increasing even more and more recreation and different things, I think that communication aspect and that social aspect is just going to increase. I don't know.
It's hard to know.
I don't have my,
And then on the back, we have some more questions about you and your career. Have you noticed any changes in the forestry profession throughout your career?
I think the main one is probably that understanding about working about people, I think, is a big one. And the importance of thinking about people. I think it's been interesting just in the time since I've been in school to now, and especially because I focus on thinking about climate change and how does climate change affect forests, is even when I was in school 10 or so years ago, there was this idea of having to put things back like they were. And so a lot of times people are talking about restoring forests to what they maybe were before European settlement. And, you know, what is the true characteristics of a natural forest? And so there's always kind of this backward looking piece. And, in terms of the work I do and climate change and just thinking about recognizing of all the different kinds of change we're having through pests and diseases is starting to actually maybe look forward and realize that it's completely different, that we don't have an analog, and that looking to the past is informative, but it's really maybe more limited than we would have thought.
Was there ever a specific date, or was it always just pre-European settlement?
It really depends on the region in which you work. And so having a perspective, a Lake States perspective of forestry, when I was in college, it was always this pre-European settlement. And so the government land office did the surveys in the 1840s? I can't remember when but anyway, so it's kind of this idea of like 1700s, early 1800s, basically in the Northern Lake States, of, you know, when they were just kind of out surveying the land, what was out there before anybody moved, because the surveyors were the first ones to come through. And so in the Lake States, there has been a fairly strong emphasis on that. But then when I work in New England, there the landscape has had so many, the European perspective has been there much longer. And so they don't have records of anything of documented of pre-European settlement or anything. And so they don't have kind of that same, they don't have a year and trying to be like, we're trying to make the forest look like it was in 1600.
Right.
They're just more, there's been so many changes in terms of just forestry and agriculture and things going on there. And there is maybe a little bit more in that region too in terms of documentation of how native populations affected the forests, of course, matters too in terms of like the forests that we had in those years weren't unmanaged.
Right. So global warming changed that to be more forward-looking?
I think climate change necessitates people to be more forward-looking, because we're on this trajectory. There's potentially some going back, but some of it's already happening. And so the future is not going to be like the past. But then there's all the other things that are going in terms of invasive species and forest health issues. So I think that those, and those are more immediate for many people. So I think that those also create this idea that it's not going to go back. So for instance, emerald ash borer is taking out all the ash. And so our new future forests aren't going to have ash. So, you know, looking back in time, we can't do that. And we've had examples like that with chestnut, but it seems like there's more and more of these things stacking.
What has been the most rewarding aspect of your career?
I have no idea.
Or multiple, or...
Yeah. I think for me, because when I started working in my position, I didn't know anything about climate change. Nothing. I remember having to print really, really basic things off the internet just so I could fake it through my interview, and then trying to figure out how to communicate that to foresters and other natural resource professionals. And now we're at the point that it's really been a big change in terms of the last couple of years, where people felt very uncomfortable talking about climate change and thinking about it, and certainly those people are still out there. But at the same time, I do feel like the conversation has actually shifted, and so we have foresters who are now trying to figure out, well, how do I talk to this about my landowners in a way that they're going to understand, or, you know, saying that they really like the stuff that our work and the stuff that we're doing. And so it's really rewarding to think about being able to have move the conversation forward in a topic that's really tricky.
and
complicated. Yeah. And hopefully that is, has been valuable, and that the projects that we're doing with people are going to help the forests.
How's the reception been? I mean, has it changed from before when people were nervous about it?
Yeah, it has really changed. For me, I have a really bad memory, so it's hard sometimes to remember what it was like. But yeah, when we were first give presentations about climate change, people hadn't heard a presentation about climate change, and if they did, it was a really technical presentation that would have been horrible to sit through by a climate scientist, and it would have made no sense. And so people would just sit back and listen to us, and they wouldn't be, sometimes people would be like outright dismissive, but most of the time people were just very quiet, and they would just kind of take it in, and you could tell they weren't really sure what to make of it, and they were just really absorbing it, and they maybe didn't ask a lot of questions, or they were kind of maybe trying to sense the room a little bit in terms of what other people were figuring out. And now people are asking more specific questions. All you have to do is start at this point. There's been so many extreme events since, was it 2013-ish when we had the drought and Hurricane Sandy? And all of a sudden you can, just in the last, since then, in the last couple of years, you start talking about climate change, and everybody will talk about some kind of weird weather event, which is hard to tie to climate change, but people have an understanding of it in a way that, a connection to it and a way of talking about it that they didn't have before. And so people definitely seem to accept things are changing. Most accept that it's climate, and the ones that aren't just understand that there's all these other layering changes that they are going to have to deal with. So
that's good that there's,
yeah.
I mean, I'm from Florida, so I don't know that people are as forward thinking yet.
Yeah, and it's definitely, it's definitely different by places and regions. And so I've worked in the Northwoods for a long time, and then I went out to work in New England. And New England, it was actually people were much more receptive to it. And I think some of that is potentially political, but I think part of it is that they've been hammered with so many storms, and they are seeing a different type of change. So people are more readily able to talk about it. It varies by audience. I still gave a talk to Department of Natural Resources training, and of course it was Friday afternoon at like 2 p.m., so they probably just didn't want to be there. But they were definitely, it was kind of a throwback to more of an audience that I'm feeling that I would have had maybe 5 years ago. So definitely varies.
What have been the biggest challenges in your career? Or if you've had any. No.
I think it's, part of me is just kind of thinking about like from the day-to-day stuff, it's just kind of trying to figure out in terms of the organization that we have, in terms of growth, a lot of it's just the day-to-day stuff of stress and workload, and we don't even have it that bad compared to a lot of the people that we're working with, but it just seems like everybody is so pulled in so many different directions, and the budgets and the staffing issues are just pervasive for everybody, and it doesn't matter if you work for a federal or a state agency or a nonprofit. It just seems like everybody is stretched really far in terms of just being able to get their work done and try and figure out how to make the best of the resources they have. It's been good in that it seems like there is a much higher value and understanding of the necessity of partnerships and collaboration in terms of leveraging different people's resources and working together and trying to make things fit. And I think that's something that's really exciting. But a lot of that is also people just comparing notes in terms of, you know, can we fill positions? Can we get funding? Can we just get the work done? Because it seems like there's so much to be done, but, you know, not the money or resources there from the government, the public, whoever, to be able to do all that work,
yeah.
all the work we could see, we could potentially want to do.
Has it been worse since it was the recession the major cause of that, or has it just been shrinking?
It seems like it's just been constant. And being in the government, there's all sorts of pieces, and so there's things about fire funding and prioritization of research versus management. So there's a lot of things going in, but it just seems like everybody has less and less resources. When I was in college, I remember being a sophomore, junior in college, and boomers would come into our office and be like, so many people are going to be retiring. You guys are going to have so many jobs. It's going to be easy. You're just going to be able to find something and just scoop it up. And they were just telling us how there were going to be all these jobs. And then the reality is that, you know, it was like for a while it was 3 years off. And then it was, you know, it was always like 3 years off or 5 years off or 5 years off. And then it was like, oh, people aren't retiring because of the economy. But then it's like over time, those people have retired and they just haven't filled those jobs. And so all of the agencies are shrinking staff. And so I think it's just a continuous sort of thing.
Can you think of a specific person that helped you along the way?
Gosh, it's probably a million. So I'm going to totally credit my husband, Rex, who I said was a forester, because he's in the field. And so it's been really great because him and then all of our friends from college are always my sounding board. Like, they keep me grounded because I'm always terrified that working in a position that's really technical, that's really focused in research, I might not work in the field, but I want my work to be as relevant to the field as possible. I don't want it to be academic. I didn't go for a PhD for a reason. I want my work to be really applied and usable. And so having a whole group of people that I work with, but I'm also like, you know, people like my husband and people, my friends, who help to kind of keep the realities of what people are dealing with on a day-to-day basis of their jobs really helps me in my position be more effective.
Last question. What advice would you give to a student or new forester?
For a student, it would, I think, one of the biggest things for students would just be to have summer jobs and school year jobs if they can swing it. If they can't, that's fine. But just to make sure that their resume is actual work in the field or something related, and not to go home and work at the high school job that is convenient, but to really go out there and start in January first, start looking for jobs for the summer to make sure that they get that experience. Because I think that once, if they can do that, if they can show that they've been out there, they'll get so many skills and start to build it up that it'll be so much easier for them to get a job and just to keep moving. Yeah, I don't know for new foresters as much. Work hard. Do your job.
So to conclude, would you like to add anything about forestry, SAF, or diversity that we didn't cover?
No.
Okay. And then finally, they want to collect demographic information.
Yep.
So could you tell me what year you're born?
1983.
And what gender you identify as?
Female.
And what is your ethnic, racial, or cultural background?
I am white. I am, European background from central Wisconsin.
Okay, thanks for your participation in this project. We have your contact information, and we'll let you know when the interviews are compiled and can send you copies of the interview recordings if you'd like.
Okay.
I'm going to turn this off.